So are we going to get dirty this week, James?
We are going to get dirty this week. Dirtier than usual.
Outstanding.
It's springtime. It's time to start making a mess.
It is. It was the end of March just a couple days ago, and it was 65 degrees. I was out hiking. It was wonderful. Snow was melting.
Yeah, we don't have any snow left here in South Central Wisconsin, but I'm sure there's still some up north there.
We had a little bit in Connecticut, but it was at a Boy Scout camp, which is covered in trees, so there's no sun.
Well, let's talk about plants.
Excellent.
Tis the season for planting, so we might as well talk about plants, because it's right about now when people start coming out of the woodwork asking us questions, and multiple questions, but and let's just tick them right off of the list here, starting with the most infamous question, the one that just causes all kinds of debate. You know, this is like a Ford versus Chevy question, which is better. Rhizomes versus live plants. Big topic, big debate topic. Back when I was a young hop grower, there was no such thing as live plants when we first got started. So now there is, and along with there being lots of different options for live plants, that comes with its own set of issues and concerns and things people should watch out for. So I just think we ought to just jump into this whole rhizome versus plant thing, and hopefully people will walk away informed, and they'll maybe land firmly on one side or the other. So,
yep. And maybe we start with defining both of them, because I hear the term live plants, and if I don't know any better, my immediate reaction is, well, I'm not buying dead ones. So what is a live
that you
plant?
Know of? Well, so we're, you okay, know, as
fair
a
point.
Fair point, as opposed to a rhizome, which is a root cutting, or it's not technically, it's not a root, it's a rhizome. So a rhizome is an underground storage organ. So it's a starchy storage organ that forms buds that the plant shoots up and, you know, vegetatively reproducing itself. So it's not reproducing from flowers, it's reproducing from these buds that shoot up out of the soil. So that rhizome that you is genetically identical to the mother plant. Same thing goes with live plants. So plants that are grown in a greenhouse, those plants are also propagated from vegetation. Those daughter plants are genetically identical to the mother plant. Either way, that's what we're after. We're after a copy, a genetic copy of the mother plant. We want our nugget to be nugget. We want our, you know, centennial to be centennial. So we propagate vegetatively using leaves and shoots and rhizomes, as opposed to like seeds. You know, how many people say, oh, I bought some hop seeds off of eBay, and what variety are they? Well, good luck with that. So hop seeds as a reproductive method are a total crapshoot, because you never know, you know, 50-50 male, female, you don't want boys. So, and then each one of those seeds is going to have a different genetic expression that's a mix between the mother and the father. It's not going to be genetically identical. So even though they're centennial seeds, Lord knows what it was crossed with, and you're just not going to end up with a cultivar that a brewer is going to know. So we go with vegetatively propagated things. A live plant, or sometimes called plugs or greenhouse plugs, are cuttings taken off of a mother plant, literally cuttings of the green growing stems and leaves, and they're rooted and forced to form into another plant. So what you get in the mail or from freight or wherever you, you know, drive them to pick them up, is you get a plant that's actually alive and growing. A rhizome is dormant, and you're going to get something that looks, it's about, anywhere from 3 to 6 inches long, and from the diameter of a pencil to, you know, an inch across, depending on the variety, and it's going to look like a hunk of wood, and it may have some buds on it, hopefully, that are little tight red buds, and it's just going to look like a stick. What you don't know is whether that thing is actually viable or not. So you may get it and put it in the ground and nothing happens. Well, you know, why not? Well, because it could have been old. It could have been stored too long. It could have been lots of different things. But you don't get that immediate satisfaction of knowing you have something alive like you do with a live greenhouse plant.
Yeah, heck, it could have just been a stick.
Oh, a stick. Yes, it could have been a stick, or a root. We see that a lot too, where these crowns are being dug up, and you know, you just got people out in the field hacking away, chopping up anything that's, you know, brown and stubby and twig like, and unfortunately, a lot of times I see, certainly in bulk, people getting actual roots and not rhizomes. And if it's a root, it's not going to do anything. It's just going to rot. So that's another benefit to having live plants, is that you know you're actually going to get a plant. But there are drawbacks there. So those are the two big differences.
And really, as a consumer of that product, of any product, there's definitely an aspect of it where you see that plant with the leaves. It looks like something alive and vigorous. So I think you feel better about that. But as we get into it, I mean, there are cost concerns and all these other things that contribute to it.
Right. And let's just cut to the chase. There is not, you know, one right answer. Plants are great in some cases. Rhizomes are great in other cases. As a startup farm, or certainly a small scale farm, you're going to not have enough of either your own plants to propagate from in a greenhouse or to cut your own rhizomes from. So you're going to be buying something from somewhere. And whether it's a rhizome or a plant, you've got to have a certain level of trust from the person who's selling you these things. If you're buying rhizomes, you're trusting them that they're variety specific, that, you know, I ordered Centennial and you're not sending me Cascade, because how are you going to know? You're not going to know until the plant gets old enough. You harvest it and you say, wait a minute, these aren't Centennial. So there's a bit of trust there. And frankly, the same thing goes with greenhouse plants. You know, I want Cascade. I don't want Glacier. Okay, well, you know, here you go. Here's your Cascades. But, you know, somebody accidentally changed the label stick that was in the tray, and, you know, nobody's the wiser. So there's a level of trust that you're just going to have to come away with.
And of course, there are places that you want to get them from. Part of it's word of mouth. You talk to other growers, find out where they're getting their quality plants. There's the Clean Plant Network.
There's a Clean Plant Network out in the Pacific Northwest. They really, it's run by the USDA. So they're really only going to get you either cuttings or rhizomes, and it's just a few. And the idea is that you're going to use those, quote, clean plants to, you know, something to propagate from. It's not like you're going to get a whole field's worth of plants from the Clean Plant Network.
So let's talk about that propagation side of things. So I'm starting out, I'm brand new. How long will it take me to propagate on my own? I know the answer to this, but can I start with six plants and 2 years from now, I've got an acre?
Well, you could figure that, you know, let's just use round numbers and say there's 1,000 plants in an acre. And if you had six plants, what we would call a mother plant, and you're going to propagate from them, there's only so fast you can do this, you know. And granted, there's the law of squares. So every time you make a cutting, that cutting will produce, you know, let's just say two more cuttings, and those cuttings will produce two more cuttings, blah, 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 blah. But basically what you find is that a dozen plants, could you propagate an acre's worth of plants out of it? Yes, you could. Are you going to be able to do it in 2 years? Probably not. Not unless you have a greenhouse and you've got, you know, dedicated facility to do that. So, and what I think people will find when they start adding up the cost of doing that, it's just cheaper to buy the damn plants or rhizomes and be done with it. Get them in the ground. That's not the place to save money. Believe me. Ultimately, this, you know, the plants are the engine of your hop empire, and you don't want to be stingy with those things. So spend your money there and be creative, you know, with your, I don't know, your irrigation or something else. Don't spend so much on a bunch of t-shirts for your fledgling company. Spend it on good plants. But yeah, it's not uncommon for people once they get, you know, 4 or 5 years down the road with, you know, a half an acre of hops to be able to start digging rhizomes off their own plants and using those to propagate. And at that point, every plant could be kicking off anywhere between 3 to 10 rhizomes. So over that time span of, you know, from baby plant to mature plant of 5 years or so, you can quadruple or even, you know, greater the number of potential plants you could get off of just digging rhizomes. But it's either way, it's a long-term deal, right?
Sure. And probably the best benefit of being able to take your own cuttings is at that point, you know what you've got.
Right. You know what you've got and you're confident in their performance. And, you know, there's really not a lot of unknowns there. The issue there is that taking your own cuttings from your own plants is also going to transport all of the diseases and viruses and everything else that those plants have. So if you're dealing with sick plants, you know, say you have systemic downy mildew, do you really want to be cutting on those rhizomes and moving them around the yard? Probably not. Even worse, viruses. If you know you've got viral infected stock, you know, last thing you want to be doing is cutting on a bunch of plants and spreading that virus around. So I would say, can you propagate on your own? Absolutely, if you have healthy plants. If you don't, then, you know, we got to consider what are we doing here? You really want to be pushing disease and sickness further around your yard? Probably not.
So you mentioned earlier that you don't want boys, and that may be the title of this episode, by the way.
You don't want boys. No boys allowed. Boys. Yep.
I'm back and forth between James doesn't want boys or anything that's brown and stubby. So far, those are in the running for the title.
Yeah, we could say, you know, slimy and squishy too.
That's even better. But could you elaborate a little bit about why you don't want males?
Well, the reason you don't want males in your hop yard is because they're going to flower, they're going to create pollen, and they're going to fertilize every other female in the hop yard. Now you've got seeds. Those seeds are going to cross. They're going to drop. You're going to have young plants popping up all over the place that are that you have no idea what their genetic lineage is. Now, for the commercial, you know, hop grower who's, you know, in this to produce hops to sell to breweries, that's not a good thing. If you're in this because you want to do breeding, that's a different story. Then, you know, boys aren't the worst thing in the world. But that's sort of out of scope of this conversation. Boys are bad in the hop yard because they pollinate, and pollinated hop cones are no good for brewing. Let's put it that way. And plus, every boy you got in your hop yard is one space, you know, one planting space less that you're actually going to get any yield off of. So let's keep them out of there. You know, we've got to make a bit more distinction between rhizomes and plants. Neither rhizomes nor plants can be 100% guaranteed disease-free. And that's something right now that a lot of folks are looking at saying, well, I want guaranteed disease-free plants. Well, you know what? A, nobody's testing their rhizomes because it's just too bloody expensive and not really easy to do on woody tissue to test for hop viruses and whatnot. And certainly in the greenhouse, these tests are extremely expensive. And if you were going to test every plant to guarantee whether that plant was disease or virus free, you know, those plants would be $150 a piece. And people just don't realize that, you know, they think that's like buying petunias or, you know, something like that. What folks should be asking for is some sort of assurance that the propagator in a greenhouse or a hop grower who's selling rhizomes have taken appropriate measures to screen out disease potential and understand, you know, hey, were these hop rhizomes taken from a working hop yard? And was it, you know, what was the yield from this hop yard? If they're live plants, you want to ask the greenhouse propagator, show me your, you know, testing records. How many, you know, how many plants do you test that you find have viruses? Have you found any viruses in the last, you know, 6 months? What did you do with those plants? And this is a massive investment in your hop yard, and you want to be darn sure that you have a high degree of confidence in whoever is providing you your plant stock, whether that's rhizomes or live plants.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you do all that due diligence, but once those plants are in your hands and you're putting them in your ground, that propagator that you receive them from has zero control over what's happening on your end. So yep. You've got to understand the fact that they are really, they're not liable for anything. You can't go back and say, hey, there's a disease now in my yard. There's all the chance in the world that came from you and not from the propagator.
I mean, that's that's true to an extent. If you were growing hops in a brand spanking new area that's hops have never grown, let's say, I don't know, Mississippi, you put in your hops and in that first year, all of your hops test positive for hop mosaic virus. Odds are it didn't come from the environment.
All right, fair point.
Right? But, you know, like here in Wisconsin, where, you know, we've had commercial hop production now for more than a decade, and we had, you know, some of the largest production in the world back in the 1860s, we have a reservoir of virus and disease here that you can't stop. You know, even 5 years ago, there was no powdery mildew anywhere in the state of Wisconsin. Now it's everywhere. Where did it come from? Well, it came from dirty plants. Did it? Maybe, but I doubt it to spread that like wildfire. So, you know, you do have, to your point, disease reservoirs out there in your hop yard. And even if you're an experienced hop grower, there's every likelihood that your plants are going to pick up disease from the environment that had nothing to do with the propagator. Having said that, if all of your young plants suddenly start throwing off downy mildew spikes and they've only been in the ground for, you know, 4.5 weeks, I think you got another, I think that's a different conversation to be had. But I mean, yeah, we were on that end, right? We would produce plants in the greenhouse and people say, well, these, you know, never yielded and they died, you know, and at the end of August. Well, when did you plant them? Well, in July. Yeah, but we shipped them to you in the beginning of May. What did you do with them? Well, I couldn't get around to it. And, you know, so there's always a reason. And then pretty soon it's your fault because their plants died because they didn't take care of them.
Yeah, not that the ham sandwich they made and left on the counter for 3 weeks and then ate gave them a stomach ache. That's not their fault.
No, absolutely not. But they're going to go back to the grocery store or the deli and, you know, raise holy hell. There's a lot of culpability that a lot of people don't want to admit is theirs.
Yes. User error, we call that.
User error, exactly. So, I mean, we could talk, I guess, you know, plants versus rhizomes. From a vigor, like a production standpoint, I was just in Michigan consulting with a new farm over there, and they're saying, well, you know, I had live plants, and those they came from us when we still had our greenhouse, and we also sold them rhizomes and to make up the bulk, and they're saying, well, you know, the rhizomes, boy, they just took off, right? They shot out of the ground and we had good growth and then it just kind of stalled. And then the live plants we put in, they just sort of didn't do anything for the longest time. And then all of a sudden they explode. And I say, well, the rhizomes you put in the ground are going to, they have no root structure. So those buds that are growing vigorously have to get energy from somewhere because they're not going to start actually making food from photosynthesis until they're 4 or 5 feet tall. So all that energy comes from the rhizome and it's just eating itself alive. So it's going to burn all that energy up. It's not going to have a root system really well developed yet. And it's just going to sort of stall. Likewise with live plants, you're taking a plant out of a container grown in a greenhouse. You stick it in the field and it just sort of sits there. Well, it's growing a bunch of root hairs. It's been bound up in that tiny little growing cell for months. Now it's out in the real world, and it's also got to grow a bunch of roots. And then once the crown gets established, boom, off to the races. So there's really no, you know, one's better than the other. They grow differently.
What about from a timing perspective, though? Because one is clearly ahead of the curve in terms of emergence and whatnot. Can you put in plants later than you would have put in rhizomes? Or can you expect them to start maturing sooner?
Oh, that's a good question. because, you know, plants can grow and go in the ground much later. You know, we've had people planting in July. I've planted in July and had good establishment, and they overwintered just fine. But a rhizome isn't going to keep that long, you know, because many of these rhizomes are being cut during dormancy in February and March. You got to keep them cold to keep them dormant. They can start to get squishy and mushy and basically rot in storage. And you really can't hold on to these things once they start to sprout. You can't say, well, I'm just going to keep them in the refrigerator for another 4.5 months until I can get around to planting them, because they're going to get covered in mold and burn through the starch that's in their rhizome and get all mushy and squishy and die. So you're really under the gun to get those rhizomes in the ground just as soon as you possibly can after you get them to, I don't want to say ensure, you know, success, because you're not going to ensure it, but it's certainly the sooner you get them in the ground, the more likelihood that you're going to get good establishment. Whereas a plant, yeah, you know, it can sit in a pot for a long time and you can take care of it until you can get it in the ground. So there is a strategy there. Rhizomes may be a lot cheaper, but your window of opportunity to get them in the ground is a lot shorter. I don't think there's really any opportunity to get faster establishment one way or the other. You might have a little bit more gratification seeing rhizomes pop up out of the ground, you know, shoots coming out of rhizomes, and you're like, hey, look, they're growing. But then everything just sort of slows down as they burn through their starch reserves. Whereas a plant, you get it in there and you're like, wow, they're just not doing anything. And you water it and you fertilize it. And then, you know, it's like, oh, I guess this season's, you know, really not going to do anything. And then you go home for dinner and then you come back the next morning and it's taken over your tractor. Again, different approaches.
Mm-hmm. So there's certainly a cost difference from what we've seen. And most of that, I'd say, has to do with the amount of care that has to go into plants, greenhouse work and whatnot. So they'll always be more expensive.
You know, and so depending on what your greenhouse scenario, you know, setup looks like, I mean, you could have 2 to 3 times the cost of a rhizome, a sale cost of a rhizome, into a plant just as maintenance costs. There's really no comparing the two in terms of their price point, saying, you know, well, you know, plants are 10 times more expensive. Okay, well, that may be true, but you're also producing that plant in a controlled environment and you have a lot more opportunity to ensure, you know, low disease pressure, good vigor than you do with a rhizome, where you're basically getting a potentially squishy stick and you're not going to know what's going to happen with it. Get what you pay for, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm counting the number of occurrences of the word squishy in so far.
Squishy.
We're 27 squishy. Minutes in and you've said it like 18 times.
18 dozen times. Squishy, 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 squishy. I use them both. I've used rhizomes and I use plants and I've used them interchangeably. Usually people say, oh, you got to put 3 or 4 rhizomes in a hole in order to make sure you get good establishment. I've never done that. I've never put more than 1 rhizome in a planting location. Mostly because I was buying them. You know, if I had mountains of them, then yeah, I'd probably chuck a bunch of them in there. But frankly, if you've got a good, healthy rhizome stock, I never put more than 1 in a location. But that's also because I'm a cheap bastard.
What about, you know, we talked a little bit about propagation on your side. How exactly does that process work when it comes to cuttings, when it comes to rhizomes? Because obviously plant propagation is a huge topic and we've done that. We've had a greenhouse and it's a ton of work. It's a full-time job just doing that. But we've also done plenty of cuttings off of roots, and that's an interesting process.
Yeah. And there's, you know, everybody's got a little bit different way of doing it, but you know, you're looking to get, you know, that rhizome is typically, it's a horizontal, almost perfectly horizontally growing. It grows in like the top inch to 4 inches of soil, where the roots, the big roots are usually down below that. You know, we've gone, some people go down with a disc off of a plow and just cut down, you know, 8 inches and just plow right down the road and then turn over a big lump of soil. Some people use like a one row potato digger. We used a double bottom plow, you know, it's an old school plow that, you know, digs down and rolls the soil over, and you're out a good 10, 12 inches away from the crown, and you're cutting those rhizomes, you're rolling them up out of the soil, and literally you've got people behind you going through the soil and grabbing them in long sections, 2-3 feet long sometimes, and chucking them on a wagon, and then we take them back into the building and cut them up into smaller pieces and wash them and all that kind of stuff. So there's really not a lot of magic to it. It's just a lot of dirty work. Certainly greenhouse production is sexier. It's a lot more technology that's involved there. On a crop in the field where you want to root prune every 5 years or so, you're going to get rid of a bunch of rhizomes anyway, so you might as well use them for propagation. And you can always go through and dig them by hand too. I mean, if you're on a small quarter acre, you know, hop yard, there's no reason you can't go through and dig rhizomes, you know, by hand with a shovel.
So when it comes to, you know, you're a purchaser of these plants, and you mentioned that we've used both rhizomes and plants, and it really depends year to year on what's available, and that incorporated with pricing and whatnot. But if you're receiving from whoever you're purchasing from, you're receiving rhizomes and you're receiving plants, I imagine plenty of our listeners are going to be new at this. They're trying it for the first time. What are they looking for when they get those for the first time? What are the warning signs that, hey, this isn't quite what it should be?
Squishy.
That's 19.
Yeah. So for rhizomes, you're looking for something that is firm, right? So that if you squeeze it, literally, it isn't squishy. You don't want to see that. You don't want to see rhizomes that have dark brown or black centers. That's usually a sign of either crown rot or systemic downy mildew. You want to see rhizomes that have at least 2 buds on them. And sometimes if you get them late in the season, they will have already started to sprout. And you don't want those things to break off. If those break off, there goes your shoots. And that rhizome may or may not be able to produce new shoots. So you want to make sure that you're handling these things delicately. You want to make sure that they don't stink. And by stink, I'm talking like rotting stink. They should smell like soil. Should be slightly, you know, musty smelling, but they shouldn't smell sour or anything like that. They should not be covered in mold. Sometimes you get some little white specks on them, which is fairly normal. But if you're going to store them for any long period of time, you're going to want to make sure that you treat them with a dilute bleach solution to sort of kill anything off. They should not be bone dry. They should be damp because, you know, you don't want these are living cells in there. You don't want them drying out. If they dry out and shrivel up, you're kind of done. So those are the warning signs of poor rhizomes. Of plants, when you get your plants, you want to make sure that those plants are not wilted. You want to look at the leaves of the plants and see, you know, they should be blemish free or fairly blemish free. No little, you know, dead specks or speckles on them. No yellow spots. You're looking for insects like aphids, alive or dead, white flies, mites. Those are your typical greenhouse pests and are indicative of how well people took care of their greenhouse. You don't want to see any moldy leaves or any, you know, like gray mold growing on anything. That means they were too wet during shipping or even in the greenhouse. So they should be, the plants themselves should be fairly rigid. They shouldn't be long, stringy tendrils. I really hate seeing that where people sell these plugs and they've got long stringy binds on them, really, really thin. That's indicative of being grown in low light conditions, and which you don't want. You want something that's sort of compact and bushy. That's been, if you take a close look at the plant, you should be able to see where it was trimmed back. And then every place where it was cut, it should have branched out at least twice, sometimes three times from there. And it'll make a nice, compact, bushy little plant. The color should be good. You don't want to see any chlorotic. That's a fancy term for yellow, sickly green looking. They should be vibrant to dark green and have a well-formed root structure. They may or may not have a rhizome. Depends on how old they are. But they should certainly have a little crown forming, and when you pull the plant out of the container, you should see roots everywhere, and you may even see some fat rhizomes starting to form. That's the good stuff.
I'm getting so many more good titles here. I mean, dried out and shriveled up just seems natural.
Dried out and shriveled up. Yeah. Yep. That describes me. That's describes my soul.
does that mean I get to be compact and bushy? Because that was the next
compact
one.
And bushy. Yeah, you got that going.
There we go.
So we're talking all this technical stuff, but I mean, you certainly have the perspective of the folks calling in saying, "What should I plant?" And what's easy to grow? And you know, you've got this. You were always on the front lines of folks looking for plants and asking those questions that some of our listeners might have. So why don't you give us your top list of questions you would hear and throw a couple really dumb ones in there.
Oh, okay. Well, I got plenty of those. You already said one of them, which is the what's easiest to grow. And it wasn't so much about plants versus rhizomes as it was variety specific. You know, I'm starting out, it's the, you know, my whole spiel. It's the whole, you know, mom said I could use a quarter acre out back. What do I put in the ground? How many of them did I put in the ground? So there are a couple of things to answer there. One is plants versus rhizomes. And for us, it was really more about availability than anything else. Well, if you want to do this variety, we have it in plants. If you want to do that variety, you need to get it in rhizomes. So to some degree, it was availability that drove that decision. Because to your point that you've been making for the last half hour, there are pros and cons to both, and neither one of them is wrong. So the easier to grow piece, again, it was variety specific, and that has to do with your geography. That could be an entire conversation on its own, just what should you grow where. But I do think that's geographically specific, and it's market specific. You know, we've seen 10 years ago when we started, it was Cascade. You plant Cascade because everyone uses Cascade. You can't sell Cascade to anyone anymore. You know, $2 a pound if you're lucky. And that'll come back around at some point, I'm sure. But I think it was 3-4 years ago we saw people tearing it out in droves because you just couldn't sell it. Whereas if I recall correctly, it's one of the more vigorous and easier to grow and more resistant to disease varieties that are out there. So even when that went downhill as a marketable variety, I would tell hobby growers who wanted to homebrew and really just do it for themselves that, you know what, it's still worth doing a little Cascade, because if you're trying to learn how this works and you don't want to be extremely frustrated by trying something that's going to die on you, start with Cascade. The other big question I would get was, how many varieties should I plant?
Oh, that's a good one.
And I know we've usually said 2 to 3, 3 at most per acre.
Yeah, I mean that if you really all you're doing is an acre, but you know the number of varieties to plant, it depends on, you know, how you're going to get the things off at harvest. Because if you got 5 acres and you're like, well, I'm only going to plant 2 varieties, well, are you able to get, you know, if you've only got a 5-day harvest window for a variety, can you get 2.5 acres off in 5 days?
Depends on how many friends you've got.
Yeah, well, I can tell you what, after the first time, you're not going to have any friends. So, I mean, there's that too. But I don't know ultimately that it, like variety wise, like you said, there's, you can plant, well, I've got Centennial and Chinook and Glacier in plants, but I've got Nugget and Sterling and Fuggle in rhizomes. So you get what you get. Say, okay, well, I'll take some of these rhizomes and some of these plants, and you end up, you know, putting a mix in, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's important to emphasize, I guess, or at least, you know, hit on it again here, that you got to know what your market is. I remember a fairly large grower coming to me saying, yeah, you know, we want to be part of your program. Okay, well, what do you, you know, these are the varieties that I'm looking to plant. You know, well, we already put in 10 acres of Cascade. Okay, well, why did you do that? Well, we talked to, you know, another hop grower out west, and they said, well, you know, why don't you work with Cascade? Because everybody uses that. So they jumped in and put in 10 whole acres of Cascade, but had no idea really what the market looked like. At that point, does it matter if it's a rhizome or a live plant? You put in something that nobody wants, so you wasted your money either way. not to be taken lightly. Do your homework there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there are so many varieties out there. And, you know, you can talk to brewers and see what they're using, but knowing full well it's going to take you 3 years to get to a decent level of yield. And in those 3 years, the market changes.
I think I do like your comment, too, about the geography and, you know, what, where is your location? Because, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, Centennial, you couldn't even get it. And it was just so hot, and it was selling for $15-16 a pound. And you had people in areas like, you know, Arkansas and South Carolina or Florida or Southern California trying to grow this hop variety that, you know, it's not patented, so it's an open source variety, and it's really hot and everybody wants it, but A, it's finicky and not easy to grow, and B, it hates heat. Just because it's available and your brewer might like it, is that variety actually going to perform in your location? You know, do some homework before you decide on that. You might want to say, well, yeah, I understand everybody wants it, but boy, it's too damn hot here. You know, Centennial isn't going to grow for us in Southern Kentucky or whatever. What will? And I think a lot of times brewers will be like, if you have a good relationship, they'll say, well, we'll use what you can grow.
And that does play right into local, which we talk about every time. The stuff that can grow by you, hopefully, if your brewers are thinking local, that's what they're able to get and that's what they want to use.
Yeah, and I would say even before you start considering rhizomes versus plants, figure out which varieties are available that will do reasonably well in your location and go from there. And then look to see what you can find. You know, if the only thing you can find is Glacier and rhizomes, and you know from your research that Glacier does well and you have a reasonable market for it, then go with the rhizomes. Nothing wrong with that. But if it's something that's finicky and difficult to grow from rhizome, like Sriracha Ace, you might be better off going with a plant. But how about not going with a whole half acre? Why don't you put in like a dozen and see how it works? And then you can always, you know, get more later or propagate your own later. So
to summarize there, I mean, in terms of determining what to grow, we said availability, we said demand, viability, which I'll say for geography, really it's viability, but it's really demand first, viability next. Not that you should grow something that's not growable, you know, demand, viability, and then availability. You can find it. You know, you can find, it's the difference between, can you find it locally where you know where it's coming from, and do you have to, you know, do you have to mail order it from somewhere else and hope what you're getting, you, when it shows up, looks halfway decent?
And well, that, and, you know, that comes back to doing your homework and making sure the people you're ordering this stuff from are following the regulations. You know, if they're shipping between states, they have to have a phytosanitary permit, you know, phytosanitary clean plant permit, basically saying, yes, we hereby, you know, swear that we are not selling knowingly diseased plants across state lines, yada, yada, yada. So, that's also something important.
And of course, state lines are one thing, but we shipped plenty of plants to Canada, and that's a whole nother level of complexity.
Yep, you bet. Now you're talking international clean plants, and, you know, shipping rhizomes is one thing if it doesn't have soil on it. But if you're shipping plants that are grown in a soil as media, but is of a certain type, then you have to have all kinds of other documentation. And actually, there was one time where, depending on the port that you're going into, you know, Canada from, you know, they said, well, you know, you have to be able to provide us, you know, fumigation records that you fumigated with X, Y, and Z chemicals to make sure that you're not transporting pests. We're like, all right, fine. We never had to do that before. We did it. We followed the directions, and it killed half the plants that were supposed to go out. Dope.
Oops.
We're like, okay, you know, and it wasn't like 20 plants. It was like 5,000 plants it killed. So we're like, well, how are we supposed to fumigate these with this stuff if it's going to kill half of my plants? This is not smart. So yeah, what are you going to do? There's nothing about hop growing that prints money. I can tell you that. whether that's greenhouse, you know, plants or selling rhizomes or selling, yeah, I don't know. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Not going to get rich quick. That's for sure.
Now that said, it's an interesting thing just to bring up is that as hop growers, which is how we started this whole thing, we're growing hops, we eventually became rhizome suppliers. We became plant suppliers. We had a greenhouse where we were able to do, what, about 50,000 plants a year, I want to say?
Yeah, that's about right.
And someone who was more or less dedicated to plant management, because you need someone dedicated to that.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're listening and you're thinking about getting into hop production, there are ways of being involved in hop production that don't necessarily end with producing T90 pellets to sell to a brewer. There are other ways to be a farmer and be involved in this industry, such as plant production.
Yep, and we did it to diversify. You know, whether if you have a bad crop year outside, or, you know, you've got an issue with selling a crop because of contracts or whatnot, you still have revenue from plant sales. You still have revenue from selling supplies and things like that. So very good point.
So what haven't we not touched on here? I mean, we talked about plants versus rhizomes and basically said they're both good. They're also both bad. It just sort of depends on what you're getting. Yep, I think we got fairly well into what to look for when you're looking at plants, what varieties to look at, what some of the options are there. We said squishy many more times than I'm comfortable with.
Squishy, squishy, squishy. I never said moist, though.
You know, I was hoping we'd get away from that. You
did, I said damp.
You did make up this word chlorotic, because you always make up a few words during...
Chlorotic, yeah. and phytosanitary, yeah.
Well, that one I've seen a couple of times.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we pretty much covered it.
I think we did. As always, if you have questions or ideas or thoughts, please comment on the website. We would love to hear from you. You know, the first comment on the website is going to be someone copying and pasting the word squishy about 87 times.
Of course, there's the Instagram. If you haven't following us on Instagram, follow us on Instagram.
Yes, you should. We'll find some good pictures of plants and rhizomes to throw out there with when we publicize this particular episode.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find some good squishy ones.
Should I get a picture of a rhizome? Should I get a rhizome and have my cat carry it around and we'll take a picture of her? Because that was our most shared Instagram post so far, was my cat when we talked about cat pee.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the internet was built primarily for the cats. The spread of cat pictures. So that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm glad we finally found our audience.
Mascot cat.
Wonderful. She was in here a minute ago chewing on the cables for my headphones. So,
oh, perfect. Excellent. Yeah, that's a good thing to have. All right, that's all I have.
Sounds good. See you soon, everyone.